Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. Big earthquake in New Zealand over the weekend. We've got some interesting details about that story. California, of course, have been having a drought. They're going drier and drier. Some new details about that. Huge moon on the way. The big supermoon is coming out. More details about that, what you can expect to see there. And, of course, more on the election aftermath here in the United States. All that and more coming up on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live, KPCG.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. This is the Monday edition. We're at 101.3 KPCG. We are online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Lots of other places to listen to, the TuneIn app, and a few other places. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, do that at kpcgfm, or you can send us anything you'd like to, any sort of email, electronic mailage. Send that to comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today. And how was your weekend?
It's great. I don't really, what did I do? Oh, I took my brother into town for dinner, and that was about it. He got pulled over because it was his first time driving off of the college campus here.
Uh-huh.
He tried to make a left-hand turn, but he turned into the far lane, which is pretty much where anyone going the other way could make a right-hand turn and hit him.
Mm-hmm.
So the police saw that pretty quickly and pulled him over.
So he's young and learning to drive, and so you got to learn the hard way sometimes.
It was pretty smooth other than that one mistake. He just didn't quite cut the left turn as much as he should have.
Yeah. I'm always a little nervous. I admit when I'm in town and I see the car come up to me that says, student driver, give him a lot of room to see what they're doing. Although these days there's a pretty good chance they're not texting, so that would make them safer than 95% of drivers on the road.
Yeah, he definitely wouldn't have gotten away with that with me in the car.
I'm always amazed at how many people I pass on a daily basis that are starting to veer into my lane, and sure enough, they're on the phones still. Even after, I think everybody knows it's a bad deal. Still people doing it.
It has been a bad deal for a really long time, but it still wasn't even made illegal in this state until last year.
Yeah.
So I guess they don't want to give us too many regulations, but once the evidence piles up that plenty of people are getting hurt or dying or hurting other people by texting and driving, they had to make a law about it.
Yeah, got to take some personal responsibility, I guess, in those things. A lot going on over the weekend and today, too. Of course, a big earthquake over the weekend in New Zealand. It's a powerful 7.8 magnitude quake. It struck in one of the tourist towns there on the New Zealand coast early Monday, creating a massive landslides that damaged roads and buildings. You've probably seen some of the pictures. Pretty amazing. Roads split in half. There's that one that's making all of the websites today where the cows are stuck on that little grass patch and like the earth dropped away everywhere else. Pretty amazing.
That's straight out of a movie.
It is. Yeah, that'll probably be included in a movie at some point. At least two people have been confirmed dead. Latest headlines I saw, I think there was a few thousand stranded tourists that just can't get out of where they are for a while. So they felt damage was reported. They felt rumbling also as far as 120 miles away in the capital of Wellington. Violent shaking displaced large amounts of boulders and opened up gaping cracks in the earth. And there was pictures of people walking, and you're trying to avoid falling in the giant crack. It's weird.
That's really weird. And they have been susceptible to quite a few earthquakes over there. And even the shape of their country kind of looks like a rift in it from an earthquake. So you can kind of get the symbolism there as well.
Yeah, they've had that, of course, like you say, a lot of earthquakes here over the years. People are used to it, but still, it can be quite severe. And I was seeing one of the reports. I think they were talking to somebody from over there. And, here in Oklahoma, we've had some earthquakes here, quite a few. But they usually last for 2, 3, 4 seconds. It's not much. But it was like 3 minutes or something. Can you imagine that, just sitting there for 3 minutes, just moving around? give you some chance to get some 3 minutes of prayer time in, at least.
Right. It's like being in a massage chair or something, too.
People be nervous, be calling out for some protection there, I think. There was a tsunami that followed the early morning quake, sending a huge surge of water as high as 6 feet into the coast. New Zealand's GNS Science Agency principal scientist Kelvin Barrowman told Radio New Zealand, "It seems like the earthquake was more like two earthquakes, very closely spaced in time. They say what remains unknown and disconcerting is whether the high number of aftershocks were just that or four shocks preceding another large quake." So they don't know. They're waiting to see.
Yeah, don't spend too much time fretting about that. Make for a pretty unpleasant day worrying about what's next.
Yeah, for sure. So 7.8, that's huge. I think the biggest we've had around these parts in Oklahoma, about a 5, I guess. And that did a little bit of damage, mm-hmm. but nothing compared to a 7.8. We wouldn't be here if it was a 7.8, I don't think.
The earth would open and swallow us right up.
We'd be gone. We'd not be around anymore. So anyway, that can be pretty frightening. A lot of damage there, thousands without power. But they do build for that. They do expect it. So they're probably handling it better than most places in the world would. So
probably, yeah. They have had quite a few. So at some point, you have to adjust the foundations of the house, strengthen the foundations, hope that the roads are more sturdy.
Yeah. So really interesting story there, and it's so funny because. Most of the headlines have been about the election. And so that story about New Zealand, when I saw it yesterday morning, it was like the 10th story down because everything else was Trump and riots and protests. Mm-hmm. And then way at the bottom, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, huge earthquake in New Zealand.
It's pretty easy to overlook natural disasters because really we're helpless when it comes to those. But when you talk about riots, those are people deciding to cause damage, and so that does seem to take up more of the headlines.
Yeah, we've got some more stories about that those riots coming up later on the program today. Speaking of natural disasters here, Washington Post, they say a giant reservoir that supplies a California county's drinking water is nearly empty. They've been having a drought for 5-6 years at least. They say Lake Kachuma, if I said that right, I hope, a giant reservoir built to hold Santa Barbara County's drinking water has all but vanished in California's historic drought. It reached an all-time low this summer, 7% capacity. 93% of that water is gone.
And it's not coming back. That's a pretty big issue over there. I've been to a couple places where they'll have a nice, green, lush golf course, and then just across the highway, everything is brown and dead, and it probably does elicit quite a few comments about why they're putting so much water into the golf course when no one can even really drink that.
Well, right, and this, of course, Santa Barbara in that area, there's a lot of celebrities that live there, and they've got to have their big fancy homes and so forth, but they're running out of water. They say there's this thick beige watermark that circles the hills, framing the lake like an enormous bathtub ring. You can see where the water used to be, and now it's not there. They say, barring a winter miracle of massive snows and rains extending into April, weather that has forsaken Southern California for more than 5 years, there will be no water available next year from the reservoir. So that's half the water that they usually use be gone, so they're going to have to rely on the other half. That's a good deal.
Yeah, it's pretty clear at this point that there are natural disasters everywhere, and we've been cursed like never before the last 10 or so years with all these different means of destruction that come just from really the weather or the environment, and it can be easy to explain that away with these kind of somewhat myths like man-made climate change and things like that, but really it does come down to curses.
Yeah, we have a good write-up at thetrumpet.com. It's a little booklet on that, Why Natural Disasters. It's worth reading and checking out because it is kind of a puzzling thing when you see some of this happening. They say the entire Santa Ynez Valley will then face a future without water. The 3,000-acre reservoir supplies half of what the valley needs to recharge an underground aquifer that nearly every household, business, and farm uses to pump water. So they are going to be without water pretty soon. They said a soft drizzle had fallen twice in the previous week, but the bone-dry ground absorbed it before any reached the reservoir. They're just taunting them. Just a little drizzle. Sad little rains, said one of the people that works there. We've had sad little rains for 6 years.
Oh, just hard to imagine what that day will be like when the water does run out, because you can't imagine it lasting too much longer, 7% capacity.
There's a lot of places in the U.S. that are, relying upon aquifers, or they're relying upon water being in a dam. You know, you have Las Vegas. There's no water out there. unless you've got water in the Hoover Dam. There is no water in Palm Springs unless you've got it underground in like the aquifers. So, and people have populated those areas. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I'm reading a book on the Dust Bowl, and when people in the U.S. here in the country was just starting out after the Louisiana Purchase, when they came to explore this land, Oklahoma, Kansas, out in this area, they said, oh, it's like a desert out there. No one would want to go out there. So originally they thought no one should come out here because it was so bad, so dry, so arid. But now, you know, people have moved out and there's large population centers. But still, if you don't have that water, you can't stay. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, and even the Dust Bowl, I believe a lot of that was somewhat caused by abusive farming practices, right? Where if you try to, you know, milk as much as you can out of the ground without letting it relax, then there are a lot of issues like that even over in the Middle East where those were some lush areas at times, and now they're just complete desert.
Yeah, there is different thoughts. There is some debate, I guess, about the exact cause of the Dust Bowl, but certainly that probably played into it. And yeah, but it was just interesting to see how, you know, we have populated these areas that really you shouldn't be able to exist in, but technology has allowed us to. But again, once that water disappears, if you can't get it from somewhere else, what are you going to do? I mean, and those are some areas where there's a lot of people, a lot of money, you know, a lot of, I think some of the big celebrities live out there in Santa Barbara. But of course, they're all going to different planets now that Trump won, so they don't need to worry about the water. Of course, there isn't any water up there either, I don't think.
There's really not. Yeah, we can maybe just redirect all the water from their houses to the reservoirs. Maybe yeah. That'll help us out, but they'll quickly be out of water themselves when they move up to Jupiter.
Yeah, speaking of, now one by one, they're all coming back and recanting and saying, well, we weren't really going to leave.
They're taking the brave path because they have to stay here and fight.
That's right. That's what they said.
Regardless of how an election works and how that is the will of most of the people.
Yeah, they decided to stay and fight once they realized all their money was here and their house and their job. So no one else wanted them.
It's interesting because if they do care so much about their money and their house and their job, really it comes down to caring about physical things the most. And Trump has done nothing but promise, like, what, cutting their taxes in half so they'll have millions more. It seems like maybe their interests would coincide with his tax plan.
Yeah, they could send all that money to the Mexico and places where people are coming from, and they could pay for their lives there. That'd be a great idea. Business Insider has interesting little tips here for people that they say a former Harvard admissions interviewer shares the four skills everyone should have by the age 18. So by age 18, you should have this. And if you're older, well, you should really have it, I guess. These are four of the big things that people need, and I think they're good points. Number one, you should have the ability to manage money. That is true. People get into a lot of student debt going to colleges. Sometimes it's maybe necessary, I guess, depending on how you look at it. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just spent on fun and games and cars.
Yeah, not a good thing.
I say that because I worked with a fellow that was always complaining about his student debt, and he admitted it, though. He said, yeah, they just gave me a bunch of money. I didn't need it all, but I took it. I didn't work, and I went out and bought a car. And now he was paying it back.
Yeah.
But he admitted it, like, yeah, we didn't use it all in school. We just used it on fun and games for the most part. Some of it on school, the rest of it on just messing around. So, and they'll hand it out to you. They will give you the money, but then they want you to pay it back. Well, it's just a wee bit of interest.
It's basically like slavery for the next 30 years, how big some of those loans get up to around $100,000.
Huge, yeah.
Which is hard to even imagine how you could actually use that for classes.
In some cases, people get a really, you know, high-paying career, and if they are very careful, they can pay it back. But in a lot of cases, they do not. So the ability to manage money, an important skill to have by the age 18, or any age for that matter. Number two, time management, always a big thing, especially when you're going to college. I think we've all found that from different places we've gone, whether it be school or college or jobs or whatever. You've got to manage your time effectively. And that's an important skill. Third one is conflict resolution. That's important too, I guess, especially if you're going to be going to college with some other people.
Some of these people who are protesting in the streets and seem quite confrontational themselves.
You gotta be able to resolve those conflicts. So that's a big thing. But sometimes it's impossible. But you gotta do your best. And number four, and lastly, they say the ability to stay positive. Those are four of the big things they think that people need by the age of 18, life skills. And boy, could use those at any age.
I feel like I might only be about halfway there. It's like,
well, you're only nine, though.
I'm only like half. Yeah, maybe that's why I'm so young still.
And here he is with a full-time job. It's really quite amazing.
I'm like 50% capacity in all four of those areas.
Yeah, man. If you can be 18 and have all that stuff nailed down, you'll have probably a pretty good run.
That's an incredibly mature 18-year-old compared to most of the ones I know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny too. They talk about conflict resolution because it seems like most colleges teach causing conflict more than conflict resolution. If you see some of the protests and some of what they get angry about and all the fighting they get into, it seems like you could resolve all of those problems quite simply, and yet they're trying to stir it up.
Well, they're specifically setting aside days for people to cry about the election results, but by crying, really, it means to protest.
Yeah, so it is interesting, but those are great points to consider. Here's a pretty just neat little story. There's an 82-year-old widower in Germany. And he found his lost wedding band. He had lost it. His wife died about 6 months ago, and he said the ring fell into the dirt while he was working in his garden. Shortly after, the couple celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. He was pretty upset by that. And his wife, who was still alive at the time, said, "Don't worry, you'll get it back someday." He did get it back. He pulled the carrot out, and it was the ring was around the carrot. It's pretty cool.
That is. I mean, did he even bother to get a new wedding band all those years?
No, he didn't, and he found it, so it came up in the garden, which is pretty neat.
That would be tough, because I almost consider my wedding ring a badge of honor. It'd be hard to not ever wear one on my finger for that long.
Yeah, well, he may have gotten a different one, I don't know, but this was the nice one that he really liked, so he pulled up the carrot.
No replacing the good one.
There
the original
it was,
one.
Right. Yeah. So that was kind of a neat little story, I thought. Of course, they made some joke about how he added more carrots to the ring, diamond joke there. It was pretty good, I thought.
It is.
So, yeah, very interesting. You never know what you'll find, I guess.
Wrapped around a carrot. That is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, just grew right around it.
I believe him, but it's just hard to picture.
Yeah, grew inside of it, I should say. At least he didn't pull it out and just take a bite. Mm-hmm. That would have been a bad deal.
Teeth cruncher,
you could choke on it, who knows. So good reason to get rid of those rabbits. I always want to steal your carrots. We have rabbits that come around and always steal stuff out of our garden. They always do. And our cat kills some of the rabbits, but not enough, apparently.
He's more cats.
He's vicious. The cat is. He will bring the rabbits and leave them for us. Just let us know they took care of it. But he'll usually take off the hands, feet, and the head.
let that be a lesson to all you other rabbits.
Yeah, he's teaching them a lesson. He's like, look at this. You think you're fast? Not without feet.
That's for sure.
So, sorry if that grossed anybody out, but I wake up to that.
It's the reality of nature. Wildlife.
Yeah, it's always so funny. He's such a cute and friendly guy until he wants to murder you. I don't think it's murder on the animal level, but he kills those things. But still, those rabbits keep popping up and they steal all the vegetables. Bad news if you are thinking about the U.S. debt. It's actually growing faster than you think, they say. In the last 10 completed fiscal years, budget deficits totaled $7.9 trillion, but the total national debt rose by a little over $11 trillion. So it's always a lot higher than what they actually say it is. That's a $3 trillion difference. They say that additional borrowing comes from two main government actions. One is a group of decisions related to federal lending, which often includes things like student loans, as we mentioned, mortgage programs, and other federal credit programs. And so there's different things that do occur that aren't always reported. So when they tell you what the deficit is for the budget, it's not the full number. So it's higher than you think. I think the best thing to look at is that U.S. debt calculator. That thing's just rolling so fast.
Actually, I did have a bunch of my students gather around the computer last week to look at that debt calculator. And it went up, I think, $2 billion in about 2 minutes. So maybe about $1 billion per minute. Which that is, the entire yearly salary of some of the richest people in the entire world.
Don't you wish your bank worked that way, but on the positive side? You just sit there watching it like, yeah, sure, buy whatever you want. It's just rolling in here, just rolling.
Even if it rolled in dollars an hour, I'd be fine with that.
Sure, yeah, no doubt. Of course, this week is kind of interesting if you like to look at the sky. Brightest supermoon since 1948 fills the sky. Probably a few people around that remember that. Back in 1948. The full moon is bigger and brighter than it's been in decades, delighting stargazers, photographers, and anyone else who's taken a moment or two to look up at the nighttime sky over the past day or two. In fact, NASA scientists say that the moon is brighter than it has appeared at any point in the last 68 years. We won't see another supermoon like this until 2034, so make sure you get a look. So this is your week to get out there and check out that supermoon.
I actually did notice it last night. It was quite stunning. I didn't realize there was something special about it right now, but it was pretty much at eye level as I was driving, and it seemed like it was extra orange for some reason, and it even seemed like it was closer to the Earth.
Yeah, it was definitely brighter. You know, it's one of those odd nights where you can see pretty decently. And they say clouds permitting, the supermoon will look around 14% larger and 30% brighter than the average full moon. It will be the closest the moon has been to the Earth for more than 60 years. So pretty neat to see that tonight. I knew it was going to be brighter, and I told my kids last night, I said, go look at the moon. It's supposed to be brighter, and they weren't impressed. They're like, man, it looks the same. I said, come on now. It's not like it's going to be, like it's that much bigger, but it does appear bigger.
It definitely did. Yeah, 14%, I guess.
And brighter. And so there was this one story, too, about the astrologers. What is it going to do? You're going to mess with people's brains. So they're like, you may not be able to sleep. I'm like, I think I will. Just close the blinds like I always do.
Right.
It's super, but it's not going to push through the blinds, right? We're not talking about like a home invasion moon, are we?
Yeah, sometimes they get really deep into how it, reacts with different living things on the Earth, as if it's not just the brightness of the moon that could wake you up. It's like it's reacting with different chemicals in your body somehow.
Right. So made me think about werewolves. What are they going to do? They'll be 30% bigger too.
They're going to go wild.
And they'll be 14% hungrier or brighter. Maybe they'll just be smarter. So I'm not sure how that works. But so there's a whole list of things they think could happen. But I think at the end of the day, it'll just be a little bit brighter and be kind of neat to look at. So, of course, this happened. A lot of people like to mess around with Photoshop, but not well. And so things get Photoshopped, but you can tell they're obviously Photoshopped. This happened to Fox Network. Fox appears to Photoshop quarterback Sam Bradford's head onto a different quarterback again.
No way.
So this happened last week. For those that follow NFL football, Sam Bradford, who is a local here in Oklahoma growing up, he played for a few teams, and then he got traded to the Minnesota Vikings. So the graphics departments, they have to quickly try to get a picture ready for the games. So they don't really get a photo of the guy. They just take his head and then put it on somebody else's body. But they didn't do it the right way. Back on October 16th, Fox appeared to transpose Minnesota Vikings quarterback Sam Bradford's head onto Terry Bridgewater's body. Terry Bridgewater was the starter for the Vikings until he got hurt with a pretty bad injury. So,
oh, no.
Which would be bad because it's two different races.
Right. Sam Bradford's white and Teddy Bridgewater is black.
Right. So that wouldn't work just alone. And then the sizing wasn't right. He looked like a bobblehead.
He's a lot bigger.
So during Sunday's game against the Washington Redskins, Bradford's likeness again appeared to be photoshopped onto a different quarterback. This time it was Matt Cassel. A former quarterback who
that's
last,
more like it.
Yeah,
that's he's also a big white guy, so maybe that could pass.
At least the races are the same, but people still knew that it wasn't right. So, of course, because the proportions again were not quite like they should be, and so what they did is they put Bradford's head with the helmet on like all kinds of famous photos and put it on the internet. So it's pretty funny if you check it out. Bleacher Report.
That's great.
They put him on like that famous picture of Muhammad Ali when he won he was standing over one of the guys.
Oh.
It's got Sam Bradford's head on it. And then he's like out in space like with the flag, the astronaut head. And I forget. Einstein writing on the chalkboard.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Bradford. Who's the graphics guy for Fox?
I don't know.
It doesn't seem
like it would be that hard to find a photo of him playing. He's been playing all year. I mean, couldn't you pick out a photo from any of his games so far?
Apparently not. So maybe it was an intern or something.
It seems like that would actually be easier than photoshopping a head onto another body, because there's plenty of pictures of him, I'm sure.
So it'll be interesting to see if they keep messing up the head there for poor Sam. He's probably like, come on now.
They should just keep it going.
Yeah.
They should start photoshopping his head onto other team uniforms. Like, oh, it's I don't know. It's a picture we found. I guess he used to play for the for the 49ers at one point.
Maybe people would start watching the NFL again if you knew that that was the thing. Or when they go up to the booth to talk to Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, you just put Bradford's head on their body.
There's some pretty good things they could do. Like, you know how on the video games they'll have like a fire icon on top of the guys who already have like 10 catches in the game. And then there's other guys who are ice cold, so their names have like like icicles hanging off of them.
Dez Bryant.
Yeah. So that in real time, they could put those icons on top of the guys depending on how they're playing.
Well, they're always trying to do stuff to make it more interesting. Now they do the thing where like you follow the trajectory of the ball with like that line.
Right.
In baseball, I find that kind of handy because you can't really see it. Mm. You don't know where it is. But they do that in basketball now too, and I don't. You know, like usually just on highlights, and I don't need it. I'm like, I can see the ball. I know where it's going.
Sometimes the graphics are pretty deceptive because for the longest time when I was watching football, I didn't know that the line of scrimmage marker and the yellow first down marker weren't actually there on the field. I thought they were actually being lasered onto the field as the game was going on. And so I realized finally that that was a graphic because I went to a game live years ago.
Where's the thing?
That's what it took for me to figure out. And then there's other times where they have like an advertisement, but it's on this gigantic billboard. Mm-hmm. And then you find out later that that billboard isn't even on the top of the stadium where they're putting it on TV. They just like basically photoshopped the billboard at the top of the stadium in that section, and then they put the ad on there.
It's all lies and deception.
It is.
I can't trust the NFL anymore.
I must say I'm in awe of a lot of their lies.
It is pretty good. The technology is pretty amazing. Key of David program's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, as well as the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. And he has more on the recent U.S. election, what Donald Trump is up to. There's been calls for Europe and specifically Germany to take a bigger lead in the world. That's been kind of talked about for a while, but now even more so with Donald Trump coming in. So make sure you listen for that program. That's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, or you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm or thetrumpet.com. In relation to that, there's a they did a poll. 74% call election legitimate, but with a vast partisan divide. So most people think that it is still correct, even though there is a big divide there.
If anything, they should be saying that it's legitimate except for the fact that 3 million illegals voted in this election. It's almost half of the states that don't even have voter ID laws. That's just beyond comprehension to me. I mean, theoretically, you could just be a tourist from Europe, and if you're there at the right time, you could go in and vote.
Right.
In the U.S. election.
And that's another headline. There's 3 million votes in the U.S. presidential election were cast by illegal aliens, they say, according to Greg Phillips of votefraud.org. So if that's true, they probably voted for Clinton. Mm-hmm. So Trump won the popular as well.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, the election is legitimate, but it's also more legitimate than we at first believed.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Live link at thetrumpet.com. You can find us, send us a tweet to at kpcgfm. Follow us there on Twitter. And send us any emails you'd like to comments at kpcg.fm as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau stopping by. And Abraham, you've got an interesting write-up here in relation to the U.S. election. Foreignpolicy.com says their headline is, "Let's face it, the U.S. Constitution needs a makeover. The 2016 election shows that it's time to start a national conversation about fundamental political reform." You know, why do they say that? Just because their candidate didn't win?
I think that's part of it, but also just all the turmoil. They suspect that the people can't be the problem. It has to be in the laws.
Well, yeah. It has a lot to do with the fact that, I mean, all this, as we're going to talk about in a little bit, I mean, all this quote-unquote turmoil is being bought and paid for and stirred up.
Right.
So it's so funny to me when it's like they create a little bit of a crisis and then react to the crisis that they created in the first place.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting about this take, because it does reflect how a lot of people think about the Constitution in general, not even in terms of what happened in the election this year. It is somewhat of a disturbing trend, but in this article he really focuses on how elections are conducted. And he just points out that 43.5% of the electorate decided not to vote at all. So it's a pretty large percentage. And he says, well, why didn't they vote? And it must be because people don't think their votes mean anything anymore. And he goes through how the Electoral College is broken, how the Electoral College doesn't work. In his opinion, there's always give and take on that. And I think almost every election, there's always the debate whether we should change the Electoral College or not. But if you do look at the population distribution in the United States, 50% of the U.S. population lives around Los Angeles, New York City, in southern Florida, and around Seattle, Washington. And where do those people mostly vote for? Democrat. So if it was just a popular vote, that Democrats would be elected every single time, just because that's how the population is distributed in the United States. So just when we're talking about trying to find a system that works, there's a lot of pros and cons to both sides of it. Then you get to the core of this article, and that is the Constitution. And I'll just quote quickly from it here. He says, "Don't get me wrong, the Constitution is a magnificent achievement. Its elaborate safeguards offer the best guarantee against the unchecked exercise of presidential power. But let's be frank, it's an 18th century work of genius. We've reached a point where our outmoded political architecture is betraying the ideals it was designed to protect." And that's the point where I disagree with him, because laws, and especially the Constitution, that's the thing that isn't supposed to be changed. It's like a rock in a river, and the water going around it is what's supposed to change, just like the people. And that's the debate this election, it seems like, to me, is the big battle is, well, should the laws change to fit the new evolving moral code of the people, or should the people change to the standardized laws of the Constitution?
Well, yeah, I mean, that to me is such a failed argument, because just because something is older, you should get rid of it. I mean, that's, now people would have different opinions about different things, but is a modern rap artist more valuable than Mozart? He's newer.
Right.
But is it better? Now, some people would say yes, but of course, I think most people would say no. There's a lot of things like that. Just because they're old. And look at the people, though. Look at the men and that wrote that document, what they had been through, their knowledge, their expertise in things. They weren't idiots. They were really, really smart guys, and they had really, really thought it through. I would stick with that.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing about this, is that they assume that people in the founding fathers, they couldn't project to where America would be today. But in fact, where America is today is the reason they wrote the Constitution, is because they knew that human nature degrades, and that they would need a law, unchanging law, in order to make sure it survives long.
So this author, does he have an idea? Does he have a solution?
His first solution.
He has several solutions.
Yes. Well, his general solution is to just begin a conversation about general political reform. And he points to different countries, how they're always changing their constitutions, because it's based off of ours. But the first thing he wants to talk about is getting rid of the Electoral College and going for direct election.
That really makes no sense, too, because if you look at the map of what counties voted for who, we were talking before the show, and all of Washington State except for Seattle voted Republican. All of Oregon except for Portland voted Republican. So if you're going to say that people's votes don't matter, what about the people in that state where 98% of the land actually voted for Republicans, and then the 2% that's in the big cities voted Democrats and they still won out? So that's why you have to have all of these states in the heartland throughout the country that vote red to cancel out basically the big city votes. I mean, that even right there just shows you that the Electoral College is a better way to do it.
Well, there are different interests based upon where you live. Most people lumped into a city agree roughly. I mean, not everybody, but most people do. There was a pretty interesting write-up right after the election arguing that we need the Electoral College. They said, if we don't have the Electoral College, we're going to become a real-life Hunger Games, to where the big city controls everything and everyone else just kind of follows their whims. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. I think the Electoral College could be reformed to better reflect how the population has changed recently. Perhaps that, but you do need a system like that in order to address the disparity in population distribution. I mean, that's just a basic thing. And to me, I'm a little confused at this man's argument, mainly because the Constitution says nothing about voting. Mm-hmm. It says absolutely nothing about voting. All of that, the Electoral College, the Voting Rights Act, all that was added later by the Legislative Assembly of America, the Congress. And so that's something we can change if we feel the need to. It has nothing really to do with the Constitution. And that's why I was a little confused by this, by his argument, because I think what a lot of liberals are doing is they're using the Trump victory to show that the Constitution is broken and that they need a fundamental shift away from this conservatism in the Constitution to something much more liberal. And I think this is just the first argument in that direction. Because to me, this doesn't make any sense what he's trying to say here. But I think it is just really interesting to see how people analyze the election. And in here, he says he would have written it even if Hillary Clinton won. Maybe he would. I'm not too familiar with this man's work.
But not published it.
Right.
Left it in his drawer.
Left it in his drawer.
Yeah, but it's just interesting to see people's take on it, and they don't blame the people or the lunacy of the candidates or the different sections like that. They say, it must be the Constitution's fault. When that's the only good thing that still exists in American government is the Constitution. Everything else is really going downhill.
Yeah, well, it seems like the Constitution's kind of being set up like the bogeyman here. Like, anything that's wrong, blame the Constitution, when I think most people don't even know what the Constitution says. It's just kind of like, well, I felt like a police officer pulled me over and was mean to me. Let's get rid of the Constitution. Well, they don't even really know what they're arguing for. What in the Constitution oppresses anybody? It's freedom, right?
Right.
Right?
So, yeah.
And, you know, the example of like, well, other nations change their constitutions. Sure they do. Have they had a good track record? I mean, do you want to live in a land where the rules are always changing? That's like trying to play a sport when they keep changing the rules on you in the middle of the game. You're like, well, what can I? That's one of the complaints if you want to look at sports. Anybody that's played a game, you're always like, well, this official thinks that's a foul, and he doesn't think it's a foul. So what am I supposed to do out here? You know, that would just be life.
Yeah,
constantly shifting rules.
And even still, isn't that what amendments are for? If we see something that exists now that didn't exist 300 years ago, isn't that, or 200 years ago, isn't that what the amendments are for? To kind of update it according to the times. It's not to change the entire Constitution, which is pretty much made to be just vague enough to where if they didn't know the new technologies that would develop, they're not necessarily speaking out against that. The Constitution is a pretty vague document in a way.
Yeah. So does he have another solution besides the...
That was the main one. Yeah. And basically that people just need to start rethinking how the country works and just really get on a movement to have some real reform in government.
Well, see, those are all just such ambiguous terms. He wants to have a conversation. Well, who's going to have the conversation? And who's going to agree? You know, you look at these protests out there, whether it be this against Donald Trump or against anything that the protesters protest, in most cases, there's no talking to anybody. It's just yelling, and they sometimes don't even know what they're protesting. They're just mad at the system, whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is President Obama did try to reform American politics, and he really did succeed quite a bit in his 8 years in office, and he was rebuked by the American people this year in the election. A lot of people see it that way, giving the Republicans control of everything because they didn't like how radical his policies were. So if you want to talk about, let's start a conversation reform, we just had one in the election.
Right.
And the people, I mean, Donald Trump isn't the bastion of conservative values. He's the most liberal Republican candidate in U.S. history. Mm-hmm. But it is, the people did show their will, and it's not because they're ignorant or because not a lot of them voted. It's because those who decided to make a choice did, and that's what the result has been.
Yeah, it seems to be kind of the rhetoric where if the media doesn't get their way, they keep saying, well, let's have a conversation about changing something. But then when they do get their way, no conversations allowed at all. Are they allowing conversations about the Iran deal? Nope, shut up. don't say anything about that. Or anything that they agree with, nah, we don't need conversations.
What about law enforcement? Let's have a conversation about the relation between minorities and law enforcement.
Yeah.
What does that mean? That just is pretty much license to go out there and burn a city.
Yeah.
Let's have a conversation, but it's going to be a very authoritative, destructive conversation.
Yeah, their idea of a conversation in a lot of cases is, why don't you let me tell you how it should be? That's not a conversation.
Right.
That's let us dictate to you what's going to happen. Interesting. Grant, you've got another article that ties in with this in some ways. The far left is planning the biggest political protest in United States history for Inauguration Day. They going to do it?
You could say it's a massive conversation. tens of thousands of people are going to flood the streets in Washington, D.C. on January 20th next year when Donald Trump is inaugurated. And if you think that's impossible, just consider that 25,000 people showed up on very short notice in New York City on Saturday to protest.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, there's pictures of all the buses waiting to take people to stir it up.
Mm-hmm.
There's even a meeting, I think, today, right? George Soros and a few other people that are big time contributors to the Democrats are meeting to make their next plan. That meeting shouldn't take long. Why don't we just keep doing what we're doing? More protests? Pay the media? Sounds good. See you next year.
In a sick way, you could say it is a masterful plan. The fact that they're able to organize so-called protests, which I think tacitly they hope turns into something a little bit more once the protests get going and get more emotional. They're organizing these things in a matter of minutes, a matter of a day or two. Now they have 2 months still until the inauguration, more than 2 months. Imagine how many people they could possibly bring to the streets of Washington.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I was watching some of the protests Saturday night that you can live stream them on YouTube, other places people have it up. I was kind of curious just to see, you know, what was going on, and it was pretty lame. They were just standing around. Nobody really knew what to do. And I think half the people were there to watch the protesters, and then there was a few instigators, but they weren't very good at instigating, so they're going to have to improve their methods, I think, because they did like their hearts weren't in it. They just really didn't. They were trying, but they were just standing around, and it reminded me of actually just being in high school when, you know, you'd always get a couple of kids that were against something, like, let's be against something in the school, and nah, nobody ever really, no one really got behind it. Felt that same sort of feeling to me.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I kind of consider these people professional, useless people. They just kind of flood the streets, and it's like they have nothing else to do with their lives. And if that's the case, you can't really see them having too much passion for even being out there to protest if they're not doing anything else anyway.
Yeah, they didn't. It was really a strange thing to see what they're doing. But they are trying. I mean, they're trying to get out there and again, protest things. And like you said, I do think they are hoping that it ignites, but it hasn't, thankfully, because if it does, that's a really bad situation.
Yeah, well, that's it's interesting, people who use protesting and inciting mobs for their own ends, for their own gains politically, because history doesn't favor those who start the mobs, because usually they become the victim of the mob. And that's what's so interesting about these elections and how that these protests are starting to become a permanent fixture in American society. It's something that we're starting having to live with, and who knows if they're going to continue every single day, but they have been. It is just an interesting development, and it is interesting to see if they do get a lot worse, because if anyone studied the French Revolution, you know what happens with mobs and the change, quote-unquote, that comes with mobs, and really just opens the door for a dictatorship. In many, especially in American democracy, if you push a government to an extreme position, they have to take extreme measures. And so, to me, they're actually fighting against their own cause by this kind of behavior, instead of taking a more civil and maybe less controversial middle ground where they could actually probably find some compromise.
Yeah, I mean, do we want to get into a situation where when one side wins, the other side just riots? And, you know, we just keep going back and forth with that type of thing. One of the great hallmarks of the U.S. is the smooth transition of power, right, over the years. And, you know, for these people that are out there protesting, I would think they would hope that the other side doesn't start protest the protest. I mean, it could happen conceivably.
Or maybe they do hope that starts and we have the civil war needed for certain people to stay in power.
It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. We were talking on Friday about that guy from Grubhub, the CEO from Grubhub. Did anybody order any Grubhub over the weekend?
I boycotted them.
You boycotted.
Just over the weekend.
Yeah.
I tried looking up their website, but I couldn't find anything.
The height of irrelevancy when you type in Grubhub and can't find their own website.
Well, he walked it back. He was, because people came out and said, I don't agree with that. You can't fire people. And he said, oh, no, I didn't mean that.
Figure of speech.
Yeah, I was just trying to show inclusion for everybody. I said, no, you weren't. So now he's backing off his big protest there, too.
That's the definition of exclusion, when you fire people for a reason. Pretty sure that's exclusion, not inclusion.
I'm including you in the unemployed line.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, if you're a Trump supporter, you have no place here, so you might as well send in your resignation now. Yeah. And I don't know how he could possibly do the mental gymnastics that it would take to say that that's inclusion. That is completely the opposite. That's saying pretty much it equates to about half the country, probably about half of his company or so, that would strongly disagree with that. And maybe he was just using a figure of speech somehow, but it doesn't really make half of your company feel too welcome if that's the case even.
It's just a great reminder you should never fire off wide, you know, emails or tweets, wide-ranging, in a fit of emotion and anger. It's going to come back on you. It always does.
Right, because how did that get out? Someone who received the email within the company had to have leaked it to a news website. That's
right.
Really the only way that could have happened.
Yeah.
So there's someone right there who disagrees with him, or else they wouldn't have thought anything of it to pass it on.
Each side, for the most part, is starting to walk everything back a little bit, except for some of these protesters that are trying to ramp it up. But, you know, even Donald Trump, he's walked back a lot of things. Like, he said that the Clintons are good people, and like, really? That's not what you said before.
Yeah, it's interesting to see if he's taking his advisor's advice to try to be a little more gentle and cordial when he talks in public. But it was interesting because people call Trump a populist leader because he said things that were popular. People wanted him to cause certain change with very specific things. And he's starting to pull back on some of those quite significantly, especially Obamacare. It seems to me that's a big issue that people wanted him to get rid of, and it seems like I don't know what his plan is, but he might replace it with something else. But it will be interesting to see if he retains his support because he is starting to back off significantly, or if he's just doing this to try to get the other side on his team before he launches into his actual first 100 days. Like, no one really knows what he's going to do or if he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth or what. So,
well, really isn't every elected leader in the U.S. a populist leader? I mean, you have to be, because you've got to say what at least enough people want to hear. And then what you actually do, it's not always accurate to that. I saw Michael Moore, you know Michael Moore, the documentary filmmaker, the professional agitator. he tried to get into Trump Tower, and he wanted to go see Donald Trump. Surprisingly, he didn't make it up there. Apparently, he wasn't on the VIP list. So they stopped him. They wouldn't let him up. But I thought, you know, they should have, but said, you know what, the elevators are out of service. He's on the top floor if you want to get up there, carry your carcass up these stairs. You can go see him right now.
He would come down an extremely different person even if he did go up.
That would be the end of Michael Moore. Yeah. We wouldn't hear from him again. Take the stairs.
I'm wondering if he's going to make another documentary soon that we can watch and do our Mystery Science Theater 2000.
He does. He does have a plan. The latest one that I've heard about is he wants to go around and do like some sort of stand-up comedy show in the Bible Belt, an atheist comedy show, just to film people's reactions. So that's really something.
I'm sure
to do.
That'll be a hit.
Oh, sure.
Is he the comedian, or is he hiring like a professional to do this?
Well, I would hope he'd hire a professional.
Okay, because I was saying if he's a comedian.
Well, I think him and Bill Maher were going to do it.
Oh, okay.
That guy, politically incorrect guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows if they'll actually do that or not. But yeah, that's some of what's going on there with those situations. And so as far as getting back to just that headline about them planning that big political protest, that what are they doing? They're just putting out the call on social media and so forth?
Yes, they have several Facebook pages that they're putting out, and they've generated a ton of interest. One of them got the interest of 7,800 people who specifically said they'd show up. Another one got about 26,000 people saying they were interested in coming.
And all going to Washington, D.C.
Right. Yeah. And there's a Twitter hashtag that's called DisruptJ20, which means January 20th. And that one claims that millions of women will be showing up to protest his apparent misogyny. And some of these Facebook pages are saying some pretty alarming things. This Twitter hashtag actually has its own Facebook page as well. So it's kind of a disruption in the space-time continuum there.
Yeah.
But it says, on Friday, January 20th, 2017, Donald Trump will be inaugurated as President of the United States, obviously. We call on all people of good conscience to join in disrupting the ceremonies. If Trump is to be inaugurated at all, let it happen behind closed doors, showing the true face of the security state Trump will preside over. So that's a pretty big accusation there. It goes on later. It says, Trump stands for tyranny, greed, and misogyny. He is the champion of neo-Nazis and white nationalists, of the police who kill the black, brown, and poor on a daily basis, of racist border agents and sadistic prison guards, of the FBI and NSA who tap your phone and read your email. He is the harbinger of even more climate catastrophe, deportation, discrimination, and endless war. He continues to deny the existence of climate change, in spite of all the evidence, putting the future of the whole human race at stake. The KKK, Vladimir Putin, Golden Dawn, and the Islamic State all cheered his victory. If we let his inauguration go unchallenged, we are opening the door to the future they envision.
So tell us how you feel, right?
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. maybe over exaggerating that just a touch.
I think they got a thesaurus and just looked up all the negative adjectives they could and just put them all in one sentence.
It's a pretty extreme paragraph. And also, a lot of people have noted that 2017 is the 100-year anniversary of the Communist Revolution in Russia. Huh. And a lot of these people have been openly calling their revolt a revolution. So they're even kind of proudly looking back at the history of Russia and trying to emulate that. There was an openly Marxist leader in Seattle who stirred up the protesting or rioting over there. So really, we need to look back and see who is inspiring a lot of these things. Obviously, George Soros, the billionaire leftist, is funding a lot of the protests. And really, the communist scum of the earth is coming back out of the shadows to really stir people up and tear down this country.
Well, what are they gonna chant? Like, down with Trump, we want Stalin. is that what they want?
Seems like it.
Stalin,
yeah.
Stalin made people disappear. Like, he, you know, the gulag.
Around 30 million of
sure,
his own people.
Because there was a rumor they didn't agree with him. So, talk about a police state. It's crazy. It's crazy talk.
These people are just really, there's no logic to what they're doing. They're just emotionally stirred up by really these puppet masters that are just using them for their own gain.
I wish on that post, that was a Facebook post or whatever, I wish they would have at the end, you know, put an ellipses and then put probably. Or, well, that's what I heard.
Like, at least
Donald Trump's going to do this. No, that's what I heard.
At least be honest about where you heard this from or if you actually think it's true, instead of just throwing it out there like it's dogmatic fact.
That's what the cool kids are saying. That's what the in crowd said. Yeah, just amazing. Well, we'll see what happens there coming up with the inauguration, but I mean, it's out there. People are talking about all kinds of things, and it's interesting because I thought Facebook and Twitter and all those were just, boy, don't say anything mean about anybody. That makes us sad. We're going to block you.
Depends on what your viewpoint is.
Yeah, they're not blocking that.
Exactly. That's going to be a really dangerous day. I mean, you can imagine if millions of people try to descend on the Capitol, there could be some big problems, probably a lot of assassination attempts.
Well, I remember years ago they had the Million Man March and like 50 people showed up or something.
Right.
It was a little more than that, but they kept calling it the Million Man March. I'm like, yeah, your numbers aren't right.
I want to adjust your name there to the actual numbers.
Yeah. Well, a large unknown amount of people march.
You can really just see, though, Trump has absolutely no chance to unite this country. These people are not going to stop. It's already been almost a week since the election, and the protests, the riots show no sign of stopping. He's come across as very presidential, and he said the right things, but it's not going to change people's minds.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. We'll of course, keep you up to date with all that as it does occur as we get closer to that time period. Thanks for joining us today on Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Keo David, coming up in just a little bit. Thanks for spending some time with us, and we'll see you tomorrow.
listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.